From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's thought that in Illinois prisons, there are possibly hundreds of people serving life sentences for murder when they didn't actually kill anyone. That's according to a recent analysis from the nonprofit news outlet Injustice Watch. And to be clear, these are not cases of mistaken identity or false confession. Rather, these individuals were lawfully convicted under a legal doctrine known as the felony murder rule. Felony murder means that if a death occurs during a crime, like a robbery, assault, or burglary, anyone who participated in the crime could face murder charges. That's true even if they were, for example, the getaway driver, and hadn't planned to kill anyone, and maybe didn't even know one of their accomplices had a gun. Not long ago, Illinois made changes to its felony murder rule, but advocates say that because the changes are not retroactive, many people, including a disproportionate number of women and young people, face life sentences for killings they didn't actually carry out. Because of the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, most of the stations where The 21st airs will be carrying that coverage today. So, because we didn't have a live show, we thought it would be a good opportunity to revisit this conversation about criminal justice and the felony murder rule. Back in February, I was joined by Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, two reporters behind that Injustice Watch story I mentioned earlier. Also joining us was Stephen Drizin. He's a clinical professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. He also served as legal director for the Center on Wrongful Convictions from 2005 to 2013. And a little later in the conversation, you'll hear from Gerald Berry. He called us from Menard Correctional Center, where he is serving a life sentence for murder. Even though he didn't pull the trigger, he was outside in the getaway car during what he was told would just be a robbery. You'll hear more of his story coming soon. But first, I began by asking Rita from Injustice Watch to explain what the felony murder rule is and the changes Illinois made to it.
So the felony murder rule states that when a person commits certain felonies like a robbery and someone dies in the course of that felony, then they can be charged for first degree murder, even if they didn't directly kill the person. Now with the reform, if they changed just one piece of it. So if a third party caused the death, like a cop or a homeowner, but the defendant can no longer be charged with felony murder. But they didn't make it retroactive, and they didn't include any deaths that can be caused by a co-defendant. So that is still, people can still be charged for felony murder for that.
And maybe we should just pause on that point, because I think that's an extraordinary circumstance you described there. Two people, let's say they're committing a burglary or something, police officer shows up, shoots one of them. The other person, and that person dies, that other person can be charged with the murder of their accomplice because the police officer shot them, at least under the prior version of the law. That was right?
Yes, exactly. And there are some cases where police officers might shoot a bystander, and the person who committed a crime that was completely does not even know that person can also be charged with that death.
Interesting. So Chloe, you talk, and we've been talking about the retroactivity aspect of these changes, or the lack thereof. Why is that a crucial part of this story?
Yeah, of course. So right now, without the retroactivity clause, this reform is about fictional people. If there was a retroactivity clause, then there would be people who could be directly impacted in a very positive way. In Illinois, there's a history of reform not being made retroactive as it relates to criminal justice reform legislation. And in this case, there was a lot of pushback from law enforcement organizations when a retroactivity clause was brought to the table. So in order to have bipartisan support to get the Safety Act passed, that had to be taken out of the legislation.
So, Stephen, I wanted to ask, as I mentioned earlier, you served as the legal director at the Center for Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern. Was the felony murder rule a factor in some of the cases that you've worked on?
It was. I mean, the felony murder rule, together with rules of accomplice liability, greatly expand the scope of the number of people that can be charged with crimes. And we've seen many cases of wrongful convictions where multiple people were wrongfully convicted of the same offense. So it does. It's been involved in numerous cases that I've been involved in. The real problem that we've been focused on at the Center on Wrongful Convictions has been the wrongful sentencing aspect of the felony murder rule. The felony murder rule, obviates the need for prosecutors to prove either the intent to kill or to cause great bodily harm. And the people involved who are charged with this crime don't necessarily commit any acts that create a strong probability of death or great bodily harm. All that is needed for a felony murder conviction is the intent to commit the underlying felony. So you have a lot of people doing hard murder time for crimes that they didn't intend to commit and acts that they never committed.
And that's such an interesting aspect, this mental state, right? Because just about every crime, prosecutors have to prove the intentionality behind it, right? Maybe that's overstating it to say every crime, but that is a core part, especially of the most serious crimes, right?
Especially for murder. I mean, this is the most serious crime on the statute books. It can lead to life in prison. It can, at a minimum, it's 20 to 60 years in prison. And so you have people whose intent was to commit a burglary, which is a crime that can land you in prison for between, say, 4 and 15 years, doing murder time, 20 to 60 years or life. And in the cases that we're talking about today, where a third party is the person who actually ends up killing a co-felon or causes the death of a co-felon, I think the unfairness of this law is perhaps at its greatest.
All right. Well, we are joined now by someone who was subject to a felony murder conviction by phone. Gerald Berry is serving a life sentence at Menard Correctional Center. Gerald, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Thank you.
So I know our time is limited and there are a lot of logistical challenges with communicating with you from Menard, but so can you just begin by telling us the crime for which you were sentenced and are serving life in prison happened when you were 20 years old. Can you tell us what happened that day?
Well, this day, I was with some friends and they was going to supposedly to go and look at an individual who they know was a drug dealer and they wanted to rob it out. Long story short, my friend found out that someone was there and acted like he wanted to go somewhere else, but ended up coming back. When I say my friend, the guy who got killed by the actual victim of the robbery, home invasion, he wanted to go ahead and go in. And so two of my associates, they went in, and I was outside in the car with another associate. And things just went wrong, and the victim ended up coming in the house, and he shot one of my associates, and my other associate shot the victim, and they both succumbed to their injuries. And although I was outside in the car, I ended up being convicted and sentenced to life for both of their death.
So I understand one of the people you were with that day was acquitted of the charges altogether, and then the man you mentioned who actually pulled the trigger pleaded guilty and got 20 years. Yet you came away with a life sentence. What was your reaction to that?
I mean, it was crushing. It was unbelievable. To this day, it's still the same thing. It's like the laws aren't meant to really get true justice. It's all about getting a conviction. It's all about them just getting a conviction and just putting someone away, apparently, because that's what happened. Like, I really feel because I didn't have very much money and I had a lawyer that was a $5,000 lawyer, I feel like that's why, I got convicted of it. And, I still sit in jail, but my co-defendant, the one who was actually acquitted, he had a $50,000 lawyer. My co-defendant who took a plea bargain, he had a $25,000 lawyer. So it's like, I don't know, it's unfair.
And just to be clear, and not to, you know, sort of rub salt in it, but just so our listeners understand, the man who actually pulled the trigger, he's been released. He served his time now. He pleaded guilty, and he's out of prison, as I understand it.
Yes, he was paroled in November of 2021.
So I wonder if the law was changed, as we've been discussing on the show today, to retroactively apply to your case, what would you do with the rest of your life?
Well, right now I have friends who I'm in contact with who these guys were juveniles, these guys who I met since I've been incarcerated, and a lot of them, they had juvenile life sentences until the law was changed, and they was able to go home, and a lot of them are criminal justice reform proponents, and they want me to come and work with them. Also, you know, I feel my trade in HVAC. I take refresher courses and do that. Truck driving, just anything to have a viable living and take care of my family, you know, and be there for my community. Pay taxes instead of sitting in prison wasting away, you know, having taxpayers take care of me.
Sure. All right. Well, Gerald, I want to thank you so much for making the time to be with us today. Gerald Berry is joining us from Menard Correctional Center. I know you only had a few minutes to talk with us, so thank you for sharing your story with us today.
Okay. I thank you all for hearing my story.
All right. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. You just heard there Gerald Berry on the line from Menard Correctional Center, where he's serving a life sentence. We're also speaking with Stephen Drizin, who's a professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law, and Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, who are two reporters from Injustice Watch, who've been reporting on felony murder in Illinois. So, Chloe, how many people are still serving prison sentences along the lines of what we just heard from Gerald there, you know, who are under this felony murder? Do you have a sense of the number there?
Yes, we do. So Injustice Watch did some data collection to examine how many people are still incarcerated under felony murder charges, and then how many of those are third party, which now would not be charged with felony murder given the reform. The Illinois Department of Corrections does not keep this data anywhere, which is why we had to do our own data collection. And we found that there are at least 198 people currently serving time who were charged with felony murder. And at least 38 of those people were in cases which involved a third party. Now, this is certainly an undercount, given that we were doing this by hand. We were going through data by looking at cases, looking at case summaries, looking at clippings. And our analysis was only looking at people who were charged with murder, not necessarily if they pleaded guilty to lesser charges, if they were charged with felony murder.
Rita, I mentioned earlier that women are disproportionately affected by these laws and young people. Can you talk about why that is?
Yeah, of course. So young people in particular are disproportionately affected by the felony murder rule for several reasons, but two in particular have to do with a person's brain not being fully developed until they are 25. And because of that, they are unable to foresee the consequences of their actions. And then also, young people are also very susceptible to peer pressure, and they're easily influenced by the environment they grew up in and the people they are around with. And so it is these factors that experts are saying are not being taken into account when charging someone with a murder. And then in particular, if you want me to go on about women,
sure.
Women with histories of domestic abuse are very vulnerable to being manipulated into criminal situations by their abusers. Recent studies show that most women in Illinois prisons have experienced domestic violence or abuse. Now, what does that mean in terms of felony murder? One, it can mean these women are in an abusive relationship and they have to go along with whatever their significant other says. Or two, it can mean they have less of an ability to say no when someone suggests conducting a crime.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation when we come back. We're talking about the felony murder rule here in Illinois, some changes that were made to it last year, making it a little less broadly applicable, but it was not made retroactive, these changes. So we're going to talk more with our guests, who are Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, who are reported on this story for Injustice Watch, and also Steve Drizin at Northwestern. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today, our show is not live because on most stations, we were preempted by NPR coverage of confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Ketanji Brown Jackson. So we wanted to revisit a criminal justice conversation we had on the show back in February about changes to the felony murder rule in Illinois. Felony murder means that if a death occurs during a crime, like a robbery, assault, or burglary, anyone who participated in the crime could face murder charges. That's true even if they were, for example, a getaway driver, hadn't planned to kill anyone, and maybe didn't even know one of their accomplices had a gun. This is what happened to Gerald Berry. He's currently serving life in prison for murder, but he was outside in the car when the killing happened. You heard him on the show earlier calling in from Menard Correctional Center in Illinois. Now you'll hear more from Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, the two reporters behind an Injustice Watch story that looked at how many people in Illinois prisons were serving time for felony murder. Gerald was featured in their story. They joined us back in February, along with Stephen Drizin, who's a clinical professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. He also served as legal director for the Center on Wrongful Convictions from 2005 to 2013. I began the second half of our conversation by asking Stephen to react to what he heard from Gerald Berry before the break.
First of all, I want to thank Gerald for calling in, and his words really struck me deeply because I've been representing many people like Gerald, for the past year or two, focused primarily on these kinds of felony murders. I'm currently representing someone whose case is very much like his, Edgar Naranjo. Edgar and his friend Johnny planned to break into a home to steal bottles of cologne. It was one of these impulsive teenage plans that never had a chance of succeeding. Within seconds of entering the house, they abandoned their plan and ran, but they happened to break into a home where the son of the homeowners was a Chicago police officer. He was home, he ran after them, and he opened fire on them as they were running away down the street. He fired 8 shots towards Johnny and Edgar. And Johnny was shot twice in the back and died, and Edgar was shot in the hand. The officer was so reckless that he even shot his own father in the shoulder in the hailstorm of bullets. Now, these two young men committed a home invasion, but the felony murder rule allowed Edgar to be convicted for first-degree murder for his friend's death, and he was sentenced to 40 years. You know, this happened 12 years before Jason Van Dyke's fatal shooting of Laquan McDonald showed us that the police version of events can't always be trusted. And in a subsequent civil suit, the family members of Johnny Salazar sued the city of Chicago for wrongful death, and a jury awarded them $4 million. basically saying that the police officer had violated guidelines and was unjustified in his shooting of Johnny. So here you have someone doing 40 years for a murder that never should have happened, a shooting that never should have happened. And his only chance of getting out at this point in time, or his best chance, is through the clemency option. In an unbelievable twist, the police officer who shot Johnny Salazar 4 years later was arrested and charged with premeditated murder himself. He stabbed his wife over 20 times, killing her and injuring her mother when the mother tried to intercede to save her daughter's life. For his first degree murder conviction, a premeditated murder, he got 25 years. So there's a lot of sentencing injustice built into the felony murder rule. And it's just not fair that people who never intended to kill anybody are doing less time, more time, or the same time as people who commit premeditated murders.
You mentioned the clemency process, and that reminded me, I do want to mention that Gerald Berry himself has a clemency petition pending before Governor J.B. Pritzker. I think it was filed in 2020, still waiting on that outcome. I do want to mention, we asked the Illinois State's Attorneys Association if they had a perspective on felony murder or the changes that were made last year. They declined to participate in our conversation. But Stephen, I wonder, there are people who defend this legal doctrine. Came across a Cornell Law Review article a few years back that made a sort of economic argument in favor of it. Quote, the felony murder rule is a tax on violence as an input of criminal production. It also said it gives criminal partners an incentive to monitor one another for unnecessary use of violence. I wonder what you say to that.
Well, the second argument is basically a deterrence argument. It's an argument that says we need the felony murder rule because what it will do is it will deter people who are committing crimes from engaging in activity that creates a strong probability of death or great bodily harm. And we know that that argument doesn't work. The people who are involved in these crimes are not trying to commit violent crimes or cause death or great bodily harm. Their intent is to do a much lesser crime, and things spin out of control. And especially in this third party scenario, they're not intending for anybody to harm, and they don't to be harmed, and they don't commit any acts that actually lead to the harm. So that argument doesn't make much sense. The argument that I think carries the most weight with me is the idea that we need to preserve the sanctity of human life, and that when somebody dies, the law needs to take that into account in sentencing offenders. But the answer to that question is just to punish people more harshly for the crimes they do commit. And believe me, 4 to 15 years in prison for residential burglary is a serious sentence. Sentence them near the 15-year range without converting burglaries into first-degree murders.
Rita, I understand, and you've looked at other states, what they're doing in terms of felony murder, California, Colorado. Can you talk about what's going on there in terms of what they're doing with this?
Yeah, of course. So California did a whole revamp of the felony murder rule in 2018. So not only can co-defendants who are committing, a defendant who's committing a felony can't be charged with a death caused by their co-defendant, or it can't be charged with death caused by a third party. And it is also retroactive. So that's what they did in 2018. And then just last year, they stepped it up even more and they expanded the reform. And people who were charged with felony murder but pleaded guilty to lesser crimes like manslaughter, they can also be up for resentencing, and they can argue that maybe they should be released earlier and things like that. So other states are really changing felony murder a lot more than what Illinois did.
Interesting. You know, we've seen this argument. There was this rare convergence, I don't know, 5 years ago or so, where you had sort of conservatives and liberals or progressives coming together to change some of these criminal justice, the harshest sentencing under criminal law in various states. And, you know, the Koch brothers on one side, you had Governor Bruce Rauner, a Republican here in Illinois, teaming up with some reform-minded Democrats. Do you get the sense that, is that moment passing us by as you're covering issues like this? I mean, do you still see conservatives making money-saving arguments, you know, against long-term incarceration with things like felony murder? Or we're certainly seeing a renewed focus on so-called law and order in Republican political campaign messaging this year.
I don't think that moment is past. I think that, you know, there is a continued focus on mass incarceration, and the felony murder rule fuels mass incarceration because it imposes sentences on people for crimes they neither intended and in some cases never even committed. And it fills prisons by giving people murder time for crimes that really aren't murders. So I think mass incarceration is, in many ways, the sort of civil rights movement of this era. And so I think you're going to continue to see efforts to do what we can to reduce the prison population and give people a second chance to get out from under some of these sentences. I want to say one other thing, and that is clemency is one option. There is also a new statute that was supported by the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. It's a second look statute. It's a motion for resentencing offenders whose punishment is disproportionate to the crime. And that statute became law on January 1st, and we're all waiting to see what state's attorneys around the country, around the state, are going to do with that law. Are they going to apply it to felony murder cases? Because there are, as we've talked about on the show, dozens of people whose sentences no longer fit their crime. These are people who were left behind by these felony murder rules. Or are they going to use it for more lighter-end offenses or drug offenses? Hopefully, they will use it in certain instances in homicide cases, because these are the cases where the sentencing injustices in many respects are the most extreme.
Yeah, looking, if you really want to stem the tide of mass incarceration, I forget the political science person who said this, but you have to look beyond the nons, right? The nonviolent, non-sexual offenses. And really, you can't simply end mass incarceration by working on the margins of marijuana laws, for example. Let me take a moment to reintroduce this conversation. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking about felony murder. The felony murder rule in Illinois, some changes that were made last year, and why activists say it's not enough. We're speaking with Stephen Drizin, who's clinical professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law, and also Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, who are two reporters who worked on a story on this for Injustice Watch. 800-222-9455. We've got about 5 minutes remaining in our conversation on this. And Chloe, I want to ask about something that Stephen mentioned earlier, which is police officer involved shootings. Can you talk about how those are categorized under the felony murder rule and what share of cases that you found in your reporting involved the actual, not one of the defendants actually shooting someone, but a police officer, as the case he described earlier?
So police officer felony murder killings are classified under a third party killing. So this has now been, mitigated from the reform. However, there are people who are currently incarcerated under first degree murder charges because a police officer shot either their co-defendant or a bystander. From the data that we collected, we found that there's about 20 cases in which this is the case. We found 38 cases of third-party felony murder, and about half of those were from police killings. The felony murder third-party rule was redirecting the responsibility of death from those who committed, was redirecting the responsibility of death from the officer to the individual who committed the felony. And hopefully with the reform, eliminating third-party felony murder, this will be mitigated, and now police officers won't be able to take advantage of the felony murder rule. But we have, you know, yet to see this play out as the reform is just now being implemented.
Stephen, it came out earlier in the conversation that Illinois has a history of not making changes to criminal justice laws retroactive. Can you talk about why that is?
I think it's a political decision. I think that in the back and forth in negotiating criminal justice bills, legislators who want to get reform on the books too willingly give up on the idea that these laws need to be retroactive. And, you know, other states like California make the laws retroactive. In order for these laws to really have an effect on mass incarceration, you need to make these laws retroactive. Clemency is an important, you know, stopgap measure, a safety net, but it's too inefficient to deal with the large numbers of people who are left behind by these laws. So the legislators need to get back in session, and you know, if they're serious about ending mass incarceration, they need to work harder to make these laws retroactive.
Any final thoughts as we're coming to the end of our conversation here? What, Stephen, what can be done to bring justice in your view?
Well, I think there are a number of things that we've talked about. Obviously, you know, the governor is going to be given the opportunity to grant additional clemencies, and he has granted some clemencies in these cases. Several of my clients have been granted clemency in these cases, and I hope he takes another hard look at these cases, you know, in the days remaining in his term and in future terms. The legislature needs to continue to work on, you know, eliminating these sentencing inequities that exist when they pass reform laws. I think we should exclude juveniles and emerging adults, those 18 to 21, from the felony murder rule. And we know that brain development science shows they're less capable of foreseeing the consequences of their actions. And many of these folks are convicted because they are thought to have been able to foresee that their actions would lead to death or great bodily harm to somebody. I think it's pretty clear that Gerald Berry, never in a million years while he was sitting outside in that car, foresaw what was going to happen when his friends went into that house and things went awry.
Stephen Drizin is a clinical professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. We've also been speaking with Chloe Hillis and Rita Oseguera, who are two reporters who worked on the story about felony murder for Injustice Watch, the nonprofit news site. We'll have a link to that story at our website, 21stshow.org. Stephen, Chloe, Rita, thank you so much for being with us and sharing your reporting and perspective with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to Injustice Watch for this great reporting.
More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.